Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Today, quite an interesting subject. We are here with Amanda Canaw. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
And Amanda really sits at the intersection between the emotional side of business and the people side, right? How do we work through all these massive emotions that business owners have? And welcome to the podcast, Amanda.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
So I'm going to take you back. You've been working previously in big corporate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love to hear that moment in time when you decided you weren't really employable anymore and you go into your own work. So tell us how that came about.
Yes, I was in corporate. I was also intersecting with government, which has its own level of bureaucracy and frustration. So I think I really felt that strain of having an entrepreneurial mindset and being frustrated with the systems in place and maybe some individuals within teams that are very well-meaning, but maybe didn't have the same kind of problem-solving mentality or pace that I was craving. So at that time, I was working as a full-time consultant, mostly with Fortune 50 companies, doing team effectiveness work. And I really thought to myself, I want to go a step deeper with these individuals than I am clinically allowed to, and also which is within the SOW of my work. So I was frustrated with this, we're touching on ways of working and topics such as the team agreements, but really this is a personality issue. We need to go a little bit deeper into what's happening internally for folks. And so I actually went back to school, got my degree in psychology, clinical mental health counseling, and behavioral psychology. And since then I've been operating my own. I'm a founder of the Modern Finishing School. So I've been helping not only those chief executives of larger companies, but also the entrepreneurs that are new to the space, new to that. So I'm bringing the business acumen, but also we're able to pivot and be pretty nimble.
And two or three questions on that.
Yeah.
Well, loads of questions on that, right? But we'll go through it. So going into this space for yourself, how long have you been going now in this
world? I recently went back to school and I've been doing this full time for the past 2.5 years. So fairly recently.
Well, you've better, the company's better than, what is it, 74% if you make it past the first year?
Yeah, fair.
I love entrepreneurs. I think the entrepreneurial spirit is something that we don't honor enough. We are less than 2% of people in their entire lives will start a business, right? And we look at the world, we see a problem out there in the world, and we think, okay, I think I can help with that problem. And then we do something different. We don't just talk about it. We get up and we mm-hmm. do something about it, right? We get out of bed and we get out of our comfortable world and we go and we step into it. And I think the challenge that I see in so many entrepreneurs is that they try and do it themselves, right?
Yes, there's an underbelly to that. Like, there's so many great things about entrepreneurs. I love this population, but there's also the underbelly of trying to take on absolutely everything ourselves. That's one of them for sure.
And we believe we can do it all ourselves. And one of the things that I hear so often is that it's lonely. Entrepreneurship is lonely, right? Because I think you go through this process of, okay, so let me tell my wife about it. Let me tell my kids about it. And after the third conversation, the eyes glaze over.
Yes.
And then you go and speak to, you can't speak to your staff about it, and you can't speak to your suppliers about it. And so what do you, what do you recommend in that kind of space?
Loneliness is huge. That's something else. It's fun because not only I think similarly to yourself, you're not only your own entrepreneur, but you're also talking to that's your clientele as well. That's the people that you're having on your podcast and that you're interacting with. And I agree, it's a really fun bunch to be around. I'm also an entrepreneur, but working primarily as a therapist with entrepreneurs. And I agree with you on the positives. They are problem solvers. Really, I'd say positive individuals. Very, very. You have to be thinking glasses half full. You have to have this resilience that gets you back up again. The underbelly of that is that there can be a callousness that forms because holding that soft vulnerability while also the resilience to keep getting back after failure is a really hard dynamic to balance. And you mentioned loneliness, that I see that time and time again because you can have a starting team or your first employees that are very passionate, but it's not their baby. And at the end of the day, like you're making decisions and the stress that's weighing on you, they didn't put their mortgage on the line. They didn't make the sacrifices that you have as an entrepreneur. So it is extremely lonely. And I think that there's been luckily more talk recently about communities, not only EO, but a lot of different communities for individuals to get together and have small groups, gestalt practices to talk about all of that. But I do think that the like a therapeutic relationship can be helpful, especially if the executive coach or therapist understands both sides. They can speak the clinical lens and they also have the business acumen. But I'm curious to ask you as well, do you feel like it is a gene? Did you feel per like made that way to have the entrepreneur mindset, or do you think it could be learned?
There's an element in this that I think is a gene, right? I was born in Zimbabwe. I grew up in South Africa, and we had a slightly different set of drivers. If you didn't make money, you didn't eat, right?
Yes.
So yeah, I often wonder about that, for my daughter, getting her up and running and giving her that drive. And but I've always, from when I was 11 years old, been really focused on how do I make money for myself? How do I get the independence? How do I get some freedom? And I think that's been so. Every time I've tried to work for somebody, it's always felt wrong. It's always felt like one of my clients came through and said, he would go into work and he'd try and fix all the problems. And he'd see these problems and it's okay, we can do this and we can do this and we can do this. So he'd try and fix the problems. And the owner wouldn't.
Why aren't we?
And it just seems to be a wiring in how we think. And I think you're right. Tenacious, positive, all of these kind of things, are top of the tree. And that's kind of why I love the community so much. You can go in, you can have a conversation, but having those deeper conversations about stress, about how do I deal with stress? How do I kind of look after myself first? Because I think that the deeper part of this is, this is our baby, right? This is we birthed this baby, and and we want to see it do well, and we believe that we're doing this for our families. We believe we're doing this for the community. But often we put ourselves second. The level of stress that I've ended up in with this, I've ended up standing at the top of a 130-foot tower getting ready to jump off.
And unfortunately that I've heard that more times than I wished is the case, that it the level of stress, I mean, you also have it celebrated in parts of the community. People joking about having like a stress-induced tic or not being able to sleep or having like bulging bloody veins in Silicon Valley. Like it's almost seen as a badge of honor to show, you know, how long have you gone without sleep or caring for yourself? And I'm fortunate to see that turning where there is a focus a little bit more on the holistic health, because if you do care for it, let's keep going with the child metaphor. If you're not at least taking care of yourself to some degree, that child's not going to fare very well in the long term. And the reason why I asked if you thought it was a gene or not, and I agree, I think that there's a piece of it which is just embedded, and I think part of it is nature and nurture. And mentioning Zimbabwe and growing up in South Africa and the poverty, before we started recording, I was talking to Roy about I grew up in a pretty depressed area myself, and you know, very rural Appalachian background. And I think that I've heard a lot of very passionate entrepreneurs, maybe not necessarily coming from a humble background, but they have a why that is so deeply tied to their identity that they can't escape it if they tried. And that's why I think that looking inward, focusing on mindset, focusing on your self-identity, self-esteem, confidence is so critical, because you cannot delineate between that line of self and the reason why you're doing this and why it means so much to you. So I think that in the future years, we'll see entrepreneurs focusing a little bit more on that holistic health, focused on the health of their company as well.
Yeah, and I think there's something else that becomes a total disparity. You like you said, enthusiastic, positive, but there's a public facing face, right? Which is all of those things, and because of the loneliness element, and not being able to share and not being able to have that connection with people, it can be so lonely and it can be so debilitating when you can't get that stuff out, right? When you have to sit with it because you can't share it with your staff because they get worried. You can't share it with your family because they get worried, and you're trying to protect them, right? This has been the thing for me. I've always been trying to protect those people that are. I don't want them to start to think, okay, I'm not going to be able to pay payroll this month. So you just carry that all yourself. So you end up with this environment where this thing that you started for freedom becomes your biggest prison, right?
Absolutely. I think that also when you're in that deeply lonely place and trying to get things off the ground, trying to go for your first seed funding or trying to prove yourself, or and when time is really of the essence with scaling, people are also very vulnerable to manipulation. So there are a lot of executive coaches or folks that may not have the entrepreneur's best interest in mind, but because they feel this desperation and loneliness to feel heard personally as well as professionally, it can be a really dangerous time period as well if they don't have an outlet. And I'm not going to subscribe a certain outlet for every individual, but I do think that obviously I see the benefits of therapy. I also do recommend not only necessarily a co-founder, but like a strong co-founding team that is invested as well, so that it's not solely on one person's shoulders. I also love small groups for individuals, but I think that wherever you end up, whatever tools you end up using to get through these bads, it's also important to just name and speak to. And I love that you're able to own your story now, because being able to share out loud that it's not always sunny and that you're struggling, and normalizing that is also a big part of the behavior shift. And I'm just thinking about like the difference traditionally between PE and VC firms, and having like a VC be more interested in like the health holistically of the entrepreneur. And those are the ones that we see really investing in coaching, and managing up for those companies.
And yeah, we look now, let's move forward a little bit into where this world that we live in, because there's a real challenge in what's ideal and what's going to happen. We're going into the AI space, right? And AI overwhelm is a very real thing. And but now there's these £1 billion companies that's got one founder, and one person working there. I think there's now two that have come up and that have hit that mark. So now, if you're starting a company now, what do you need? How do you actually gain that connectivity, that human part that allows you to actually grow and scale, right? And I spent a lot of time playing with AI. It's one of the things I do, and I know you do that as well. So how are you seeing this come into the space?
Yeah, it's talked about a lot. I talk about this a lot publicly. I just had a panel with song. I'm in Nashville, so with songwriters. I had the head of Sony Music on with just doing a panel, and it typically goes, as most things do, to the AI discussion currently, and the existential dread, but also excitement. People seeing it as a tool. Individuals recognizing that. Me trying to create like a drum cadence on a record is going to be very different than a professional. And really, in some ways, I see it the same as a calculator. This is it matters whose hands the tool is in, and it is a very exciting time. But when you think about companies, I'm actually working with a couple clients right now that were saying, oh, maybe we could draft an agent that can talk through personal struggles that people are having and give them prompt advice. So I think that there's a place for technology, and I think it can be really helpful in addition to relational dynamics, but I don't think that there's going to be anything that replaces human connection, personal connection. I think that's why people listen to your podcasts. I think it's because they are seeking out heart and soul and individuals, and not just a notebook LM telling them information. I think flaws are going to be more celebrated. And in terms of what a founder, if they have started a successful AI company as a solopreneur, congrats, first and foremost. I don't think that that means that they can't have very important, meaningful relationships with their partners, and by that I mean personal and professional partners, even their clients, talking in forums, being a mentor in that space. So I think that it doesn't take away the need for relational focus, even if you're having success.
I think there's, something that I believe to the core of myself. AI is a 60% tool, right?
Absolutely.
And the challenge at the moment is people are seeing it as a 90% tool and trying to get it to do 90% of the stuff. We have to remain the architect. We have to know what it is we want. We have to treat it like any, junior staff member. And we have to answer business problems with it. And I think what'll come out of the wash in the next year or two is that if we can bring the human to the surface, if we can have those connections with our clients, with our suppliers, with our staff, if you've got a 10 user company or a 50 user company at the moment, and you can turn around and say, right, I'm not going to get rid of the human, I'm going to raise the human, right? I'm going to let these guys work 6 hours a day or 5 hours a day, and I'm going to do 20 times the volume. And we're just going to focus on the human element. Those are the companies that are going to go, right? Those companies that just lean on AI and say, look, you just do everything, they're going to feel, AI slop. You're going to be able to tell.
Yeah, and we as a society can tell already if there's something that feels a little bit off if the human isn't kept in the loop. I also believe that it's going to be really hard for companies that are now just focused on cutting and focused on efficiencies and not thinking about the long-term strategy, to rebrand and get over it. Like there's been some decisions made which show the innovation. And then you have the CEO of Nivea who's like, oh, we're not just a chip maker. We can do this and this and this and this. And they're in the vision, in their core, you can see that they're using it to expand and all that's capable. And so I think if you are an entrepreneur, and going back to what we were talking about as an entrepreneur mindset, this is seen as a positive, for sure, there has to be laws, there have to be, some guardrails in place, but as a positive tool to continue to grow. And if you tend to see things as just a hindrance or negative or red tape, I think that those individuals will likely continue to view AI that way. And companies that are view have leadership viewing that way, you'll see that as well. So I think that this is really going to be the age of the entrepreneur that we're coming into.
I think one of the challenges that I have is that as an entrepreneur, I'm there to fix problems, but I'm also there to learn, right? I love learning. I think that's one of the core skills of what makes us, a different breed of people, is we're always driving to learn. And the first thing that happened, we touched on AI overwhelm, and it's such a real thing. I think there's 62% of people are struggling with AI overwhelm. And this comes about because, first of all, I've got a list of problems that I know I should fix, right? Yeah, they've been a list that's been there for the last 20 years. Now all of a sudden, I start doing stuff and I realize, oh, yeah, I can help me with this. So that list just gets bigger, rather than coming back and focusing on what's the actual problem I want to fix and just doing that. That list just gets bigger and bigger. So we really have to guard against that.
And I think that we're going to have to think about tools as well. So whenever I think of that about over AI overwhelm and also just like the fatigue or people struggling to think, it reminds me of long COVID. It reminds me of people struggling to adapt back to work with young children. And it's just we're going to have to navigate this from a health perspective, the same we have with other previous innovations. Just like we had the blue light mask or the blue ray masks for screen time, and we've thought through that. There's going to be an entire new genre of health wellness that's focused on combating that AI fatigue, which is so real. But if people are feeling that right now, I would just normalize, continue to normalize like you are, that it's all of us are struggling to think that we want to go straight to it for idea generation as opposed to just thinking on our own. Confused with sentence, and then also just kind of needing to reboot personally. I know I have.
I've done a large number of strange things in my life, and many people have said, "No, you should write a book. You should write a book. You should write a book." And I don't type very well. I should have learned to touch type when I was in school. I didn't. We didn't really even have computers in school. So yeah, that's how old I am. And when ChatGPT came out, and I could talk to text. And that was effective. That suddenly started opening up, everything that I was able to do. So the possibility of writing a book became real. So I started talking in, started talking in, talking in, started talking my stories in. And I realized that, while people are very, very nervous about doing an AI document or an AI book or an AI whatever it is, it's that level of 60% that you can do. This 60% tool that can help you. I've written my book. It's called Thinking Outside Your Brain with AI. The amount of time and effort that I took to do it, was substantial. It's 20 years worth of knowledge. But you have to bring that to everything. You have to bookend at the beginning and bookend at the end and the middle. What is your project? What are you trying to do? How are you trying to get that out? And when you get it right, it's really empowering. This talk to text and AI has actually given me my voice. It's
That's incredible.
given me, okay. I went and I did a book writing retreat in Florida sometime last year. And I'd gone through this process of talking my stories in and getting AI to get my spoken voice and then getting it to do my written voice, and that was a, but it wasn't quite touching. It wasn't being emotional enough, right? Or I wasn't being emotional enough, and it wasn't the AI wasn't being emotional, my input wasn't emotional enough, right? And then I've been doing a program, and I met this amazing guy called Dennis Ross. And Dennis Ross is a—he's a wordsmith of the most amazing capabilities, right? He sits on this call. There were 2.5 hours, 100 people on the call, and everyone was crying. That's how powerful he was with words. And I was like, I really want to be able to do that because I want to be able to talk to my audience, right? But I don't have that skill. So how do I do that? And I went through the process of learning some of it. I spent some time learning it. Then I was like, okay, how can I get AI to use this skill that I know is out there that I need to help me write in a better way? So took my own stories. I spent hours and hours talking those stories in. And I was like, okay, I'm going to apply these principles from Dennis Ross to that. And I literally sat there and I read the first one and it brought me to tears. My own story that I've been telling people for years and years and years. I was like, okay. And that to me is the power of AI. It's not getting it to do it for you. It's getting it to massage what you have, to be closer to what you're trying to put out there.
Absolutely. And that's so empowering. I'd love, is it available at this point? I'd love to get you to sign a copy. I might shoot you one.
No, it's on Amazon. It's
Incredible.
and it's just the a lifelong dream to be able to go out and do something that I wasn't able to do. And you don't need to make it difficult anymore. It doesn't need to take you. I mean, I start the book and I talk about, I'm an author. I'm not a writer. I've never been able to be a writer, right? But I definitely authored every single part of this book. I put my heart and soul into it. And I think that's really for me the power of AI. There's 1,000 skills out there that we used to have to go out and we used to, in such a deep way, learn the stuff. We needed to put it into our mind. We needed to take it in and process it. And then we'd maybe go away from that course that we just learned, leave it for, I don't know, 6 months and start doing that work. And then we have to recall. And we don't need to do that anymore, right?
Which
There's
is
a 1,000 experts right at our fingertips.
absolutely, it's a relief. I'm doing the same thing. I've coded my own check-ins with clients. So how I'm using AI in a therapy space where in between sessions they have a place to remember how they're doing that day, things that are coming up, how they're feeling in different categories of their wellness. And so I can take that information, that good data, similar to you telling your story in detail to AI, and have and be and show up as a better therapist and counselor for those individuals. So it's remarkable. I'm very excited for the next coming years.
Yeah, I mean, I've been going through this process now, probably for about 7 months now, of learning the coding piece as well, vibe coding and how that all works. And the reality is, a lot of people are social mediaing this as, oh, this is just easy, you just do this. And it's not. It is very, very difficult. I've got two different sets of Claude Code and Codex, and they do a lot for me, right? They do a huge amount. They do social media posting. They do all sorts of stuff. But to make sure it's in my voice, the number of iterations that I've had to go through, is insane, right?
And it's also energetics. I think it's how you show up, even with that first input or those first prompting questions. It really is a lot, especially with social media, about how you're showing up to it. The audience can tell. So
If you just throw it out there and say, "Give me something," you're just going to get something. If you throw your heart,
Exactly.
you throw your heart into it, then you'll get heart out, right?
Absolutely. And I've felt that with certain creators, I can tell. And I don't know exactly how it's the same with images where you just know, and it's not as simple as like the three, like the this, and this, or like some of the pros, because I know that people can speak over that at this point, or they know how to take out the ampersands, but there's something that you can tell, and I think that does get across to people.
Yeah, and that's a double-edged sword, right? Because a lot of people are saying, "Oh, that was written by AI," and yes, you can tell it was written by AI. But where do you draw the line between, "I wouldn't have written that before," right? Yeah, I wouldn't have
Right.
got.
We used to have, we have Word and on our computers where you can double click to have, oh, did you mean this word? Which is a better synonym for what you were trying to say. And we use that tool and technology to rework, or you have a ghostwriter. I think that, yeah, the same can be said. It's definitely a scale.
So where do you see, before we wrap up, where do you see the next 6 to 8 months going in this space?
The same rapid growth that we have been seeing up until now. I think that the past, if you look back a year or two ago, what was happening to now, I think that we can anticipate the same vast scale of growth. I think that we can also anticipate the same levels of burnout and loneliness and craving for human connection and authenticity and flaw that you have seen popping up recently. I think that we'll see that growing as well. And then that's aside from everything geopolitical and going on in the stock market, but a lot of change, a lot of excitement to come. I think that it's an opportunity to grab life by the horns and look in play really in a way that we haven't had the luxury of before. So personally, I'm looking forward to the next 6 or 8 months. And I think there's also a release of control where I don't know what the future holds. I don't think any of us do. And I think that letting go is also a really healthy practice that some people are not ready for. A lot of people that I work with or have worked with are not going to be ready for, but it's probably extremely healthy in the long term for us as a society.
Yeah, I see a world in the future that has, AI doing the repetitive tasks and humans connecting more, going on more holidays,
Working on art, creativity, absolutely.
creativity. Those things. I mean, we've all done a nice ChatGPT picture or a nice, kind of banana picture, and you're right, it doesn't have a heart, right? It doesn't have a heart, and there's Yeah, a lot of these training courses now. Okay, just go and walk around outside with a camera and make it messy, and it's going to be this wave, of us finding our feet again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, if you were to give your entrepreneurs, the people you're speaking to, one bit of advice from a psychological point of view, right, from a point of view of how they look after themselves, what might that be?
I think that it's from a psychological point of view, but also good business practice is to show up authentically, to show up in the mess and in how it's working, and not be too afraid of being unpolished. I think that that's missed a lot, and it really connects to your consumers, seeing the building being brought into the building of something, as well as for yourself. If you're being disingenuous, if you are disintegrated from self, that leads to a really unhealthy place where you are going to a place of burnout without connecting into your body. So I think the more that you can just try to take somatic practices in, try to show up authentically recognizing where you are, even if it's not great, and just being okay with what it is and not pushing for something else. That's the healthiest practice I can imagine.
Well, Amanda, thank you very much for joining me. It's been a pleasure
It's been
talking
an
to
absolute pleasure. No, thank you, and I can't wait to read the book.
you. Magic. Thanks for listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.